Morning again. And this week's Sedra is Truma, which talks about making the sanctuary. And that means they are the Jewish people are camped at Mount Sinai. They've heard the Ten Commandments. It's been a very spiritual moment. And then comes the building of the sanctuary. And so this week's Sedra, Truma, talks about that. And so we're going to look at this opening verse. The discourse that we're going to be exploring is from 1983, a discourse the Rebbe said in 1983. So that's what we're going to be exploring. So first, let's look at the verse from the Torah. So here we have the beginning of the Sedra. Hashem spoke to Moses saying, and he says, speak to the children of Israel, Dabel b'nei Yisrael, v'yikhu li truma, and let them bring take for me a offering. This is a gift, this is a donation. Me'et kol ish asher yidvenu libo, from every person whose heart prompts him or her, tikhu et trumati, you should take my offering. V'zot ha'truma, this is the offering which you should take from them. And it gives a list of zahav, gold, silver, copper, various kinds of colored wool, oil, olive oil, spices, precious stones. And then here's the key verse. Va'asu li mikdash, and they should make for me a sanctuary, v'shachanti b'tocham, and I will dwell among them. Or I will dwell in them. Now, the Al-Sheikh, I believe it is, makes the comment, which is then repeated by the Chabad Rebbeim, that this word, betocham, I will dwell in them. See, the English gives it a different spin. It says, I will dwell among them. But the what the Al-Sheikh says, and which these Chabad discourses also emphasize. Va'asu li mikdash, they should make for me a sanctuary. V'shechanti, and I will dwell, and you would have thought it would say, v'tocho, in it, I will dwell in it, in the sanctuary. But instead it says, I will dwell in them. And from that, the Al-Sheikh and the Hasidic leaders of Chabad learn the idea that God is going to dwell inside each one of us, that inside each individual man and woman, there is a mikdash, there is a sanctuary. So, and now this is going to be explored by this discourse, further aspects of this. And so we will stop sharing this and we will have the Mimer melody, the melody of the Mimer, Heidevara and Helen Nicole. And I'm just going to make the point again, as in the email, Nicole and David have very, very kindly offered, hi Sarah, have offered their beautiful, wonderful, warm, welcoming home again to us for a Purim event that will be on the Monday night in 2 weeks' time. Monday night is the beginning of Purim, and then there's Tuesday day. So Monday night, we will have hopefully a Megillah reading and Purim party at David and Nicole's. And so everyone who that's in Northwest London, Oakwood Road, and so NW11 6RN, and everyone who is able to come physically, I hope you can make it. And I hope that my wife, Kate, and I will be there. And that will be very special to see people face to face. So we are now going to have the Mimer melody. And then we're going to try to find the mime. Oh, ya, 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 yo, ya, yo, ya, 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 Ho yiriramba yomba yom ya yiriramba ho yiriramba ho ya yiriramba ho ya yiriramba ho ya ya ho ya ya yo. And we find the discourse, hopefully. Now. Where is the discourse? Where is it gone? Hold on, I have to get it from somewhere. I think it's over here. Right, okay. Right, here's the discourse. And so this is from Shabbat Parsha Truma, the 6th of Adar. 1983. They should make for me a sanctuary and I will dwell in them. And our sages of blessed memory said, whenever it says this word li, li means for me. And so God is saying, they should make for me a sanctuary. So the sages say, whenever it says for me, Eino zaz le'olam, it's not dislodged forever. Lo be'olam hazeh, not in this world, lo be'olam haba, not in the future world. So for example, Beveit HaMikdash, Mahu Omer, about the temple, what does it say? Va'asu li mikdash. They should make for me a sanctuary. So it's emphasizing this word, this word li, that it means for me, which means that the sanctuary should be eternal. Now we're all aware that the sanctuary was made. Okay, we don't know exactly where it is. The temple was built, was destroyed, the first temple, the second temple was destroyed. Now that's exactly what the question which the Rebbe asks. But tzarich lahavin, we have to understand this. Hare, in other words, we've got a question. Greetings, Rebbe Lu, very good to see you. This is from Tavshin Mem Gimel, the discourse, the Truma discourse of Tavshin Mem Gimel. 5743. So we have to understand Hari HaMikdash, now the sanctuary, the temple, which means the sanctuary they made in the desert, which is called the sanctuary, Hayubo Shinuyim, there were changes that took place. It moved from one place to another. How can you say, just on that score, how can you say that it doesn't move, it's like permanent. The sanctuary wasn't a permanent structure. It would be folded up, put onto wagons, and then they would come to a new stopping place and put it up again. And then the temple, the actual physical temple that King Solomon built, and the second temple, Shneim Nechrevu, they were both destroyed. Not only did they have changes taking place in them, they seemingly were completely destroyed. So how can the sages tell us that it doesn't move forever? It's from the Midrash, this statement, that when you've got the word li, it's permanent, it doesn't move forever. How can you say that, whether about the sanctuary, which was impermanent and moved from place to place and kept being folded up and put up again, folded down, folded away, and then erected again, and the temple in Jerusalem, the first temple was destroyed and the second temple was destroyed? So that question is asked by the previous Chabad rebbes. Now, the third Lubavitcher Rebbe named Menachem Mendel, and he's called the Tzemach Tzedek after a series of books that were published with his responsa, his letters explaining points of Jewish law. People had asked him from all over Russia points of Jewish law, and he had written answers to them. So that set of books is called Tzemach Tzedek, and that's what he is called. So he said in the collection of books, which is the manuscripts that he left, the thousands of pages of manuscripts, which were then printed in 40 or 50 volumes in the middle of the 20th century. So he says there, Shemikdash Elyon, that the upper temple, Mukhuba Mamash, is really joined, La Mikdash HaTachton, to the lower temple. Uche Inyan, and similar to the idea that we have about Jerusalem, there's a phrase, Yerushalayim HaBnuyo, Jerusalem, which will be rebuilt. It says this in Psalms. And then it says, Ke'ir shechubra la yachda, the city which is joined together. Now, what does it mean it's joined? She Yerushalayim shalmaila, that the upper Jerusalem, mechuberet, is joined in Yerushalayim shalmata, with the lower Jerusalem. So Jerusalem is joined to the upper Jerusalem. There's a spiritual Jerusalem, and the physical Jerusalem here below is joined to that spiritual Jerusalem. In the same way, the Rebbe is saying, the temple, which is here below, is connected to a spiritual temple. And that spiritual temple is eternal, even though the physical temple might get destroyed. But the spiritual temple is always there. V'zeh eino zaz le'olam, and that's what it means, that it is never dislodged, it's always there in an eternal way. Shemeye gam achshav beruchniyut, that even now, in its spiritual terms, Mikdash Elyon, the upper temple, radiates to us. So that's a way of understanding this midrash, this saying, that since it says the word li, right, it's still highlighted over here. Since it says the word li for me, they should make for me a sanctuary. And the midrash says that whenever it says li for me, it's something which is permanent. So the permanence of the temple is in the spiritual temple. So that's the way that Tzemach Tzedek, the third Lubavitcher Rebbe, explains this. Omnam, line 16. Omnam lecha'ora. But it seems, says our Rebbe, Inyan ze shayach lemikdash elyon beruchniyut. Saying that it's eternal, that is talking, as you've just explained it, as the Tzemach Tzedek just explained it, the third Rebbe. This is talking about the upper spiritual sanctuary, which is a spiritual thing, not a physical thing. Avol ma ze shayach lemikdash hagashmi. But what does that have to do with a physical temple? Alav ne'emah, about which it was said, ba'asuli mikdash, they should make for me a sanctuary, that's the sanctuary in the sedra of the week, and it's talking about making a physical sanctuary here in this world. And when the sages say that if it has the word li for me, they should make for me a sanctuary, she'eino zaz le'olam, that it's permanent, what's that got to do with the spiritual temple? The spiritual temple is all very well, but what about the physical temple down here? And that's the physical temple about which it says they should make for me a sanctuary. So it's like a question which is going backwards and forwards. Yes, the Rebbe has quoted this idea of making the sanctuary, and then the Midrash says, since it says, make for me a sanctuary, God says, that means it's permanent. The Rebbe asks, what do you mean it's permanent? The two temples were destroyed. And then comes the answer that the Tzemach Tzedek gives, the third Rebbe gives, yes, but the upper temple is permanent. And the Rebbe comes back and says, well, it's all very well talking about the upper temple, but we want the lower temple, and the when the verse, they should make for me a sanctuary, it's talking about a physical sanctuary in this world. And that's the one about which the Midrash says that it's permanent. How can the Midrash say it? It wasn't permanent, and the temples were destroyed. So the Midrash seems to be talking about the physical temple. How does it work? So then line 19. V'yesh lomar, now one can suggest, so shulechein mevi, quote Kedushat Zadmur Tzemach Tzedek, so because of this problem, says the Rebbe, he's suggesting, because of this problem, the Rebbe, the Tzemach Tzedek, brings another explanation. He brings Odvil, another explanation. Alpi Mashanema, according to the phrase, the verse which says in the book of Ezekiel, Va'ehi lahem lemikdash ma'at. God says, I will be for them a small sanctuary. Now, what does it mean, a small sanctuary? Now, Ezekiel was a prophet who was guiding the Jewish people when they had gone into exile in Babylon. And he was a prophet who was there in Babylon, and he had very striking visions, which he shared with the people there, with the community, and they were inspiring. They showed that God's vigilance is still with them. God is the presence of the divine is with them. And this word, this phrase, Mikdash Ma'at, the little sanctuary, the little temple, it emerges in his book, the book of Ezekiel. And what does it mean, the little sanctuary? And the sages of blessed memory say, Elu bate knesiot, these are the synagogues, ubate midrashot, and the study houses. So in other words, we've got a new kind of temple. There's the actual temple in Jerusalem, and then we have these synagogues, which are all over the world. Now, and at that point, they were in Babylon. They made synagogues, they made study houses, and those synagogues and study houses, they are the Mikdash Ma'at, they are the little temple. So, Hainu Shebechol Makom, that means in every place, Gam Bizman HaGalut, even in the time of exile, Hinei Abate Knesiot Abate Midrashot, the synagogues and the study houses, Heim Mikdash Ma'at, they are what is termed the small sanctuary, the little sanctuary, Shemesham Enozaz Le'olam, and God never is, the divine presence is never dislodged from that small sanctuary, which is there in the local synagogue, the local study house. Now let's go to the next. V'yesh lohosif b'zel, that's on page 12, and one can add, d'zel gam tochen inyan de'eino zaz, and that's what it means also. This is the inner meaning of when it says that it's the divine presence isn't dislodged mirushalayim shomayla of the up from the upper Jerusalem, the mekevon she'eino zaz mirushalayim shomayla, since the divine presence is not dislodged from the upper Jerusalem, lechein gam lo zaz mirushalayim shomata. Therefore, also the divine presence is not dislodged from the lower Jerusalem. The gam ka'asher haya churban, even though there was a destruction of the temple, that destruction of the temple באופן דחילה חמתו על העצים ועל האבנים. What was destroyed? It was the wood and the stones. But nonetheless, the temple remains, the essential temple. Nishar gam Beit HaMikdash Lamata, the temple, the lower temple, even the significant dimension of what we mean by the lower temple is still there in Jerusalem. And in what way is it there? Habatei Knesiot uBatei Midrashot, in the synagogues and the study houses, Shehem Mikdash Ma'at, which are the small sanctuaries. So in other words, there's the temple which is above, corresponding to the temple below in Jerusalem. And the temple below in Jerusalem is sort of manifested in the synagogues and the study houses. So even though the temple in Jerusalem is destroyed, the synagogues and study houses, which are all over the world, including here in London and everywhere else, and in Cleveland, and wherever we might be, and so there is the there are these little temples, and that's where the divine presence is. And so, therefore, we can say that the divine presence never leaves the temple. And so, we have the temple, which is the small temple, which is all around us, around the world, in synagogues and study houses, and that is the permanence of the temple. And that's what it means for Asuli Mikdash, they should make for me a sanctuary. And using the word Li means that it is permanently there. Rabbi Lou, would you like to add something on that?
Not yet.
Okay, thank you. Hi, Shana, nice to see you. And Eleanor.
Hello, thank you for having me. Sorry, I'm late.
That's it. Any comment by anyone? Eve?
Well, is that very inclusive of women?
Of women? Well, that's a very interesting.
Women don't do much in the Beit HaMikdash HaKatan, do they? I mean, they show up for Kiddush.
Well, in the big Beit HaMikdash, there were always women, because right. A very common offering in the Beit HaMikdash, I think the most common offering, were the doves that a woman would bring when she'd had a baby. So she would bring doves, as a pair of doves, as an offering, unless she was going to be more extravagant and bring a sheep or something. And so there were always like queues of women waiting, to bring this offering.
Well, that's lovely, but it didn't transfer, did it?
To the study houses and the synagogues.
Yes.
Well, according to Rabbi Shneur Zalman, in an intriguing comment that he writes in his first book, Rabbi Shneur Zalman wrote the book Tanya, which is very famous, and he also wrote a code of law, which wasn't published in his lifetime. But his very first book, which was published before Tanya, was a book called Laws of Torah Study. And in that book, he writes that in the time of the sages of the Talmud, women would go to the synagogue and the study house, and they would hear teachings given by the rabbi, and the rabbi would say them in a language that the women would understand, which is a striking thing. And there isn't a clear Talmudic source to what he's saying. It's a comment by Rashi. And Rabbi Shneur Zalman is, Rashi speaks about it as if it's for men who don't understand sort of the scholarly Hebrew. But Rabbi Shneur Zalman infers that it's not only men, it's also women, and they would go and they would listen to the rabbi giving this sort of instructive sermon. So as far as he was concerned, there was some sort of place for women in the synagogue. And of course, in a modern community, the section for women is a very important part of the synagogue. And for women who manage to get to the synagogue, it can be a very meaningful experience. The study house, at the moment, most study houses are male study houses. There is a sort of Orthodox movement trying to create women's study houses. But certainly the idea that women should study Torah is, you know, even if they're studying at home, is certainly an important thing. So their house, now that's a very interesting thing, actually. I'm very glad you mentioned this, because the Rebbe applied the word Mikdash Ma'at to the small sanctuary, to the home, where the woman is the mistress of the home. So there's the small sanctuary in the temple. There's the big sanctuary in the temple in Jerusalem. Then there's the small sanctuary in the study house and the synagogue. And also, as declared by the Rebbe, there's the small sanctuary of the Jewish home, which is another spiritual locus. And that's where the woman is supreme. And in fact, the Rebbe said that in the kitchen, which he said is the holiest room in the home, there should be a charity box fixed to the wall, the way it is in many synagogues, that there's a charity box fixed to the wall, you know, so that when the people come and pray on a weekday, they're able to put some coins in the charity box. So the fact that it's on the wall makes, you could say the reason it's on the wall is so no one takes it away. But the Rebbe explained that it means the whole structure becomes holy with the holiness of the charity box. And he recommended that people should fix on the wall of their kitchen a charity box, so that so the kitchen and the house are manifestly something holy. So I'm glad you mentioned
that. I think we're going to go ahead and do that, Charlie. I think we're going to go ahead and do that. That's beautiful.
Okay, that's very beautiful. And you know, one should remember that that is your Mikdash Ma'at, your small sanctuary, which is there permanently. Yeah. And there it is permanently in your home.
Yeah, beautiful. That's beautiful. God bless him.
Right, okay, we're going to come back to the... Now.
Can I ask before...
Yes.
But the Ham also can say in their heart. It's a simplistic way of doing it. And in the heart, Hashem is always there all the time.
That's a very nice way of putting it, Rivka. And indeed, in line with the discourse, which says, Ba'asuli mikdash v'shechanti b'tocham, make for me a sanctuary and I'll dwell in them, b'toch kol echad v'echad, inside each individual, one can indeed say that the divine presence dwells in the heart. But on the other hand, when it says V'asuli Mikdash, it also means the physical sanctuary. So there's the sense that there needs to be something physical as well. So if we say that it's the study house and the synagogue and the home, then we have a physical place as well. Whereas what you're saying, that it's in the heart, that's certainly true as well. So we're looking at it different ways. Thank you, Rivka. Omnam, however, tzarich lavin, we have to understand. Mao achidush be'inyan hamikdash, what is so special? The idea that in the temple, in the sanctuary, whichever kind of sanctuary, shebo yeshno, Hashraat Hashchina, what's so special about the idea that the divine presence dwells in the sanctuary? V'hadektiv, after all, it's written, Et ha-shamayim v'et ha-aretz ani male, God says, I fill the heaven and the earth. Hanu she'elekuto yitbarech, that means that godliness, nimtza b'chol makom, is found everywhere. God is everywhere. So what's special about saying that it's in the sanctuary, it's in the temple in Jerusalem, or it's in the study house, in the synagogue, or in the Jewish home. Surely, wherever you can go to a forest, go to a desert. The divine presence is there as well. Now, when we're talking about godliness, the Hasidic using sort of Kabbalistic imagery, there's a concept of godliness which fills the world, and which we could call in English the immanent aspect of the divine. And there's another aspect of the divine which we could call the transcendent aspect of the divine. And the Rebbe explains how this phrase, this verse speaking about how I fill the heaven and the earth, God says, this refers to both those aspects of the divine. Belohak bechina zu belekut, not only that aspect of the divine, she'ef shalom ma'aleh ha'toam ma'aleh, about which you can say it fills the world. Bechinat ma'aleh kol almin, and that's the radiance which fills the world. Or the ma'inam is there, but Eila, gam bechinat ani, but also the quality of I, ani male, I fill the world. So this quality I is the other aspect of the divine, the transcendent aspect. Bechinat sovev kol almin, or the ma'ilam is there, and even higher. And gam bechinat zu nimtzeit bechol makom. Also this aspect. So whether it's the immanent or the transcendent or even beyond, it's everywhere. So what's special about the actual temple when we talk about the divine presence being there, whether we're talking about the temple in Jerusalem or we're talking about the study house temple or the synagogue temple or the home temple, the kitchen temple, or the heart temple, but surely God is everywhere. So, now, even if you'd like to say, you know, this is a very interesting way of understanding. You see, there's a strong emphasis in Chabad teaching, and most especially in the Lubavitcher Rebbe, our Rebbe's teachings, is the idea that it has to be something with our own effort, the human effort that the individual puts in. So even if you suggest, line 17, shahamshachat ha'likud, that the drawing down of godliness, tzichaliyot al yedei avodat ha'adam, has to be through the service of the individual. A person has to do something about it. Now, you see, when we say that God fills the heavens and the earth, so we're not doing anything about that. God fills the heavens and the earth, full stop, whether we're there or not. Seemingly, God fills the heaven and the earth. But when we're talking about a sanctuary, whether we're talking about the sanctuary that they made in the desert, or the temple that they built in Jerusalem, or the study house, or the synagogue, or the kitchen, that's all a place where people are doing something. So you might say that that's the important thing, that there has to be the action of human beings involved in enabling this divine presence to dwell there. But still, adayin einu muvan, but there's still a question, maze shayach leva'asuli mikdash dafka, why does this directly link to this verse about making for me a sanctuary, which seems to be about the specifically the temple, and so what is the significance of the temple if God is everywhere anyway? Now, this is a very interesting question. And the Rebbe is going to quote Tanya, Achainyan Hu. Now, the answer to this, Kamavo Baruka Batanya, as explained at length in Tanya. Now, in Tanya, it's the last three chapters of the first part of Tanya, is answering this question. And it's something very striking. But as it explains in Tanya, the hachidush de Beit HaMikdash, the special thing about the temple, who shetiyeh hashkat hashkina begalui, that this divine presence should be should dwell there in a revealed way, b'makom mesuyam, in a particular place. U'kumo hanefesh hamitlabeshet beguf, like the soul which is enclosed in the body. Hare hanefesh yetzim pashut. Now the soul is really something that pervades everything. Hanimtza b'cholei v'arei aguf b'shaveh. It's there throughout the body, in the sense that the nefesh, the soul, gives life to the body. So the body is alive. Every part of the body is alive. Da'ota nefesh, that same soul, he, amitlabeshet, is enclosed b'chol ramach evarim, in all the 248 limbs of the person, v'shesagidim, and the 365 sinews. The nefesh, the life force, is all around the person's body everywhere. Nonetheless, God created a person often in such a way that the place where the soul is most revealed is in the brain, in the head. That there, in the brain, in the head, that's where the life force of the person is. And from there, it flows, the life force flows to every other place in the body. And similarly in the temple, in the temple, the indwelling of the divine is in a revealed way, as if that were the brain of existence. And from there, the life force flows throughout the world. But there are two opinions about this, as explained elsewhere. Exactly what kind of revelation of the divine there is in the temple, whether it's in such a way that it just sort of transcends the actual physical temple, even though it's revealed there, or it's in some way enclosed within the temple. So there's a discussion about that. But let's just take the basic point that there is this divine indwelling in the world, and the place where it dwells is particularly in the temple in Jerusalem, all these other varieties of temple that we've outlined, that the discourse suggested, and we came up with our own addition as well, together. So there is the divine, and that is the revealed dimension of the divine. And then indeed, the divine is everywhere in the world. It's in a desert, on the water, on the moon, or wherever. Everywhere there's the divine. A million light years away, yes, the divine is there as well. So the divine is everywhere. But the sort of brain of the divine is in this mikdash, in the sanctuary, and the sanctuary is in Jerusalem, or it is in the synagogue, the study house, the kitchen, the heart. That's that's the sort of the brain of the presence of the divine. And in that way, we can understand this comment by the Midrash, that when it says, "V'asuli mikdash," they should make for me, the Jewish people should make for me a sanctuary, that this is going to be something permanently part of the Jewish people. Okay, so are there any problems, questions at this point? Okay, so that's...
Rabbi...
Yes?
Tally.
Yes,
hello.
Jeffrey.
Hello. The Mugen David, the two triangles, would that be a similar thing? You have the upper and the lower, the macrocosm and the... No?
if you want to think of it that way, it's the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe asked his son-in-law, or it might have been even before he was his son-in-law, or maybe he was already married, I think. And he asked his son-in-law to write an answer to a non-Jew who had sent a letter to the Rebbe, to the previous Rebbe, asking about the symbolism of the Magen David. And it seems that the Rebbe wrote a long answer, but I don't know if that answer exists. Maybe Rabbi Lou knows. Does that answer exist of the Rebbe about the Magen David?
It presumably exists, but nobody knows where it is.
Right, right. So we haven't...
Well, hopefully exists.
Yeah.
Might turn up every couple of weeks. You get, you know, different manuscripts that show up.
Right.
Walk-in houses and libraries.
Right. So the Rebbe wrote some kind of long explanation. So I don't know what was in the explanation, Jeffrey. And, you know, that might be, you know, the macrocosm. There are many ways of understanding this Magen David symbol.
Thank you.
Right. So now we come to the other aspect of this verse, the way that the God is dwelling inside each person. V'hine amru rabotenu zichronam livracha. Now our sages said, so this is page Zion, line 7. Our sages said on this verse, Allah pasuk v'asuri mikdash, they should make for me a sanctuary, v'shachanti v'tocham, and I'll dwell in them. B'tocho lo ne'ma, doesn't say I'll dwell in it, Eile b'tocham, it says, I'll dwell in them. And that means b'toch kol echad v'achat mi'Yisrael, inside every man and woman of Israel. Very interesting that the transcriber of the discourse heard the Rebbe say, every echad v'achat, man and woman. So there within every man and woman, there is of Israel, there is dwelling the divine presence. And from this we understand the Inyan Zeshev HaMikdash, this aspect of the temple, this permanence of the temple, Yeshno b'chol echad v'echad m'Yisrael, it's in every individual, v'chein gam ha'pchatim shev HaMikdash, including all the details of the temple. And this is a very interesting idea, which is explained at length in the Bosi Legani discourses, which you can find online in Chabad.org. You can type out Bosi Legani, BOSI LEGANI, means I've come into my garden. And there you can find a whole book of discourses, four very beautiful discourses translated into English, which goes into the details of the temple, things like the planks of the temple, the offerings that were brought in the temple, what kind of material the planks were made of, and how all that relates to the inner being of the person. All right, so that's you know, further exploration a person could take. Now, va'inyan hu, now the thing is as follows. As explained in a number of places, including a certain book by the Tzemach Tzedek, what the Rebbe here calls the Sefer HaMitzvot, normally it's called Derech Mitzvotecha. There's a book by the Tzemach Tzedek discussing individual mitzvot, and it is it's available in English as well. It's very profound Hasidic teachings. Now, looking at the way the sanctuary was made, we're going back to the actual sanctuary in the desert. So before the temple that's in Jerusalem, we're looking at the sanctuary in the desert. So it was made of curtains and planks. And curtains and planks mean there were planks of wood, which made a kind of a frame of the sanctuary, the framework, the basic framework, like the walls. And then over the walls were put this canopy of curtains, and that made the roof, and it also covered the walls on the outside. So Shezel Inyan, and that is the idea of Makifim Upnimim, surrounding radiance and inner radiance. So when we're talking this Kabbalistic way of looking at divine radiance, we already mentioned the idea of the transcendent and the immanent. So the curtains represent the transcendent radiance, and the planks, or the vessels inside the sanctuary, they represent the inner radiance. So it is in the spiritual service of each individual, which in general can be divided, service with inward things, and service with more surrounding. So the immanent, the inner thing, is like something inside, and then there are things which surround. So there's two kinds of service. So for example, study of Torah is an inward activity. We understand the Torah, we think about it with our mind, it's sort of assessed, discussed, explored, investigated. That's all like cerebral dimension, and it's something that's happening in an inward aspect of the person. Whereas if you talk about the person's strong will to achieve something, that will is something which covers the entire person, and so everything in the person is sort of focused on this will that they have to do something special and spiritual and holy. And so that will is described as the surrounding energy. And then this, the Rebbe links this with another verse. God wears light like a robe. Note shamayim kayeria, spreads out the heavens like a curtain. The Yesh Prinat Shemaim Kayeria, there's the heavens like a curtain. Shehu Bechinat Makif Mibachutz, that is this surrounding dimension, external. The Yesh Prinat Ote'or, and there's also the idea of wearing light. She'inyana Or, and the radiance of the light, the shining of the light, Hu Laha'ir Midifnim, is to, in order to illuminate inwardly, Pnimiyo, in an inward way. So that is, so this is linking the same idea that there's an inner form of service and an outer form of service. And now it's going to translate that into the actual life of an individual. Line 22, Uva avodat ha'adam, and in the service of the person, ha'avodat v'fkidat makif u'levush, that service, which is like something surrounding, something which is outside, like a garment at outside, he avodah bekiyum mitzvot. Now, it puts it in a very interesting way here, that this outer dimension is the keeping of the mitzvot. The hamitzvot heim levushim, because the mitzvot are garments. Kamavor v'tanya b'tchilato, it says near the beginning of Tanya, sheheim b'tchinat levushu makif. When we carry out a mitzvah, it's as if the mitzvah is a garment, something surrounding us. And then he goes into different kinds of mitzvah. But let's just understand the other pole. So there's mitzvot and there's Torah. So mitzvot are something which surround the person, and the Torah that we study is something internal. So then, coming back to the mitzvot, he explains that there are two types of mitzvot. Yesh u'bepratiyut yoter, this is page 8, and it's line 3, in more detail. Yesh b'mitzvot shtei b'chinot, there are two aspects of the mitzvot. B'chinat makif ha-karov u'b'chinat makif ha-rachok. Now, this is a very profound and beautiful idea, that when we're talking about a surrounding force, a surrounding radiance, there is a closer surround and a more distant surround. So if you imagine a person in a house, so the person is wearing clothes, and the clothes are like the clothes are the surrounding of the person, but they are close, not clothes, but close. They are near the person. The person is in his or her clothes. So the clothes are around the body of the person. But the walls of the room or the walls of the house is a more distant surrounding, and it's also surrounding the person. So we've got two aspects surrounding us in physical terms, our own clothes and the walls of the house. Just a minute, Ophir, let's finish this paragraph and then we'll discuss. So there we have two types of surrounding energy, as it explains in Hasidic teachings. And so this also is expressed in two different types of mitzvot. Having said that the mitzvot are the surrounding dimension, sheyesh mitzvot shein al pi tam b'das. There are some mitzvot which the mind can comprehend very easily, like it's a mitzvah not to steal. So the mind can comprehend that. Yes, even if we didn't have the Torah, there would be a social contract, utilitarianism, whatever. We would understand somehow that you don't steal. V'yesh mitzvot she'ein l'mayla mitam b'da. Then there are mitzvot which are beyond understanding, and something like kashrut, for example. So this is something that is a divine chok, a divine statute. It's another kind of mitzvah. And so what it's saying here is that the mitzvah that we understand are like the inner kind of surrounding, and the mitzvah that we don't understand are a more distant kind of surrounding, which in that sense, it's a higher radiance. We're talking about divine radiance surrounding us, and the mitzvot we don't understand represent a higher level of radiance. But there's a Hasidic analysis which said even the mitzvot we think we do understand actually have within them a transcendent level as well, but that's another story. Now we come back, having spoken about this service in a way of surrounding dimension, we now come to the inner dimension. And as mentioned before, hu inyan limud ha-Torah, that means studying Torah. Kamavova Tanya Sham, as Tanya explains there, shahatorah nikret mazon, Torah is called food. Mitzvah are called garments, and Torah is called food. And there's a verse, b'toratcha, your Torah, the person says to God, b'toch me'ai, is in my belly. I've eaten your Torah, so to speak. The Torah sustains us. We eat physical food to sustain us physically. We study Torah to sustain us spiritually. Aval af pichein, but even so, it says, ote or kasalma, and that's talking really about the Torah, and it's speaking about God wearing light like a robe. Hainu shegama ode tarot had the Torah, that means in the radiance of Torah that we've said is something internal, yesh bo b'chinat salma, there's also the robe like a garment, b'chinat matif, which surrounds the person. And that's because there are two types of Torah. Just we saw two types of mitzvah. There are two types of Torah. And what are the two types of Torah? Nigle the Torah, the revealed Torah, the Talmud, the code of law, upnimiyut ha-Torah, and the inner dimension of Torah, Tanya, mystical discourses, and so on. That is all the inner dimension. So there are two aspects of mitzvah, and two aspects of which are the two kinds of makif, the two kinds of surrounding radiance, the closer surrounding and the further surrounding, like clothes and the house, the walls of the house. And then Torah, which goes inside us, is the inner dimension, but there is the revealed Torah and the inner dimension of Torah, and that inner dimension has the quality like a robe around us. So although it's Torah, it is surrounding us as well. Okay, so this is a big chunk that we've just read, and Ophir wanted to say something. Maybe other people have something to say as well. So Ophir, what is it you want to say?
I just had a thought when I was listening to you talk about, giving an example of us wearing clothes and garments and how that differentiates the mitzvot. I was thinking about the Kohens and the clothes that the Kohen Gadol or Aaron, the first Kohen Gadol, had to wear in order to do certain things and come into the sanctuary. And I was just wondering if you could elaborate on the analogy that you gave and that correlation with the Kohans, because obviously, with Hashem being B'tocham, with the Kohans, it's a slightly higher level to the rest of the Jewish people. And they have to wear certain garments and made of certain materials, touching the skin, not touching the skin. So just the analogy you gave made me think about that. And I was just wondering if you could elaborate on that idea further.
Well, there's certainly, there are Hasidic teachings about the clothes of the Kohanim. Interestingly, there's a story that Rabbi Shneur Zalman would give private shiurim, private talks, study lessons to his daughter. He had a daughter called Freda, and he would give her private study sessions. And there is an anecdote about a time when he was teaching her about the clothes of the Kohanim, and he was telling her something about, the spiritual meaning of the clothes of the Kohanim. Now, the problem was that our brother, Dov Ber, who would later be the second Lubavitcher Rebbe, wanted very much to hear what his father was telling his sister. So he hid in the room behind some curtains. They had long curtains coming down to the floor, and Dov Ber, who was a young boy, he hid in the curtains. And so there is Rabbi Shneur Zalman explaining all the different garments to his daughter, Dov Ber's sister, but he didn't explain the belt of the Kohanim. And Dov Ber was very, very intrigued. But what about the belt? What about the belt? So he was wearing like a sash that people would wear, a gartel. And he pokes this gartel through the curtains, and his sister's like right across from him and can see. And the father is standing with his back to the curtains. So the sister, Freda, she says, and father, what about the belt? And immediately Rabbi Shneur Zalman turns around and grabs Dov Ber. He knows it's not her question, it's his question. And he sent him out of the room. He wasn't allowed to overhear the teachings that he was given. Anyway, we don't have a record of that teaching. I'm sure that would have given you lots of
information. So basically, I have to belt up.
Okay, are there any more comments from anyone else?
I just wondered where you'd put prayer in that threefold division. I mean, doesn't it cross all of them? Internal and distant external and close external.
That's a very interesting point. I think that you see, prayer is a sort of a direct bond with the divine. And, I think you've got a point that it sort of crosses.
Because you've got all these rituals as well, right? You've got to, the Torah gets dressed differently at different times, and you've got the ritual, which is definitely external. I mean, so...
Well, you see, on the one hand, it's external, but on the other hand, that's a connection, it's a connection with the divine. But, right.
Interesting, right? Because, I mean, some things you can say, oh, well, this is just external, even if it's got an inner meaning. But this one, this seems to, like, cross all of them.
Yes. Yeah. I think
What about the korban in the temple? Did that cross all of them?
I think that would be on the same line as prayer. See, the korban, the offering in the temple, and prayer are really equivalent to each other. They're both avodah, they're both service of the divine. But I must say, I think that's an extremely interesting question, because I don't know a simple answer to it. To say, as you've said, that it crosses the lines and it combines both is an interesting way of putting it. So, thank you. I'll try, and later on, hopefully, a group of us study this on Shabbat afternoon, and we'll maybe someone will suggest an answer.
Wow, that would be great, yeah.
Okay, let's see.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Now, so then it says, now, by making the temple in spiritual terms, that means the service in these two dimensions, keeping the mitzvah, and studying Torah, we merit that we should have what the verse says in the Torah, v'chein ta'asu. You see, there's a phrase, thus you should do, which is there in the Sedra. I should have highlighted it when we read the Sedra. But Rashi says, l'dorot, you should do this for the generations in the future. So they're making the sanctuary at Mount Sinai. And then in the future, b'veit olamim, in the future temple, the La'atid Lavo, they will make another temple, as it says, Mikdash, the sanctuary of God, which your hands have established. In other words, there will be the final temple, the third temple, which will be established permanently. Kigama Mishkan lo amad l'olam. The sanctuary didn't last forever. And the temple that Solomon made didn't last. But Davka Mikdash Dila'atid, it's the sanctuary of the future, the temple of the future, which is the one where we say this is the sanctuary that God established, that will be a Bayit Nitzri, that will be an eternal temple, as the Zohar explains. But the empowerment for that is the sanctuary which Moses made. And as we have there in this verse, v'chein ta'asu, and so you should do it. And Rashi explains there that will be in the future. And now we have the very last part of the discourse. V'yihi ratzon me'et, be the will of God. Shebekarov mamash, very soon. Yeh binyan beit hamikdash hashlishi, there'll be the building of this third temple. Because we're learning about it in the Torah, we're learning it now. And Torah is eternal. And especially when we're studying something relating to the Sedra of the Week, as is known, the saying of Rabbi Shneur Zalman, that Tzrichim lichyot im Parshat HaShavua, that we have to live with the Sedra of the Week. Then there's a special kind of empowerment, that through being involved in studying Torah, the Kiyuma Mitzvot and keeping Mitzvot, we will achieve in our own days, mamash, really, the Vinyan Beit HaMikdash HaShlishi, the building of the third temple, Bagula mitit v'ashlema, in the true and complete redemption, al yedei Moshiach tzedkenu, through our righteous Messiah, the Hamikdash and the temple itself, who omed muchan lemala, is waiting above, it's standing waiting, uvereg mekameimra, and in one moment, yered lemata, it will descend below, B'mheira b'yameinu mamash, swiftly in our time, really.
Amen.
Amen.
That concludes the discourse.
Sorry.